高校英语专业八级考试指南，由上海外语音像出版社录制出版，第四册。
Test 7, Part 1, Listening Comprehension. Section A, Talk. On the 11th of January, 1894, two British Protestant missionaries, Messrs. Lorraine and Savage, reached what is now Mizoram. Within half a century, the Metzos had been converted almost to the last man and woman by Baptists or Welsh Presbyterians. Why such dour and Puritan religions appeal to such an outgoing people with a well-developed taste for rice, beer, and raucous drum accompanied singing is a mystery, at least to me. But the Metzos remain resolutely, cheerfully, enthusiastically Christian. It's one of the most enduring achievements of the pioneer missionaries, though with hindsight perhaps the greatest achievement of Savage and Lorraine was in reaching Mizoram at all. It still isn't that easy. No other Indian state is quite so inaccessible. There's a daily flight from Calcutta, but the landing strip, an hour's drive from the state capital, Aizawl, can't cope with anything bigger than an 18-seater plane. Flying into Aizawl is an entrancing experience. From Calcutta east across the breadth of Bangladesh, over the estuary of the Ganges, then up into the mountains beyond, Mizoram consists of steep, jungle-clad hills, range upon range of them, all the way to the border with Burma. All the settlements are on hilltops. Aizawl, a city by any standards, is spread out along ridges on slopes so steep the houses are built on wooden stilts. From the air, the villages seem to be perching precariously on top of dense forest, and every now and again a stout wooden church towers above the woven bamboo houses. For the Metzos, Christianity serves to reinforce their identity. Like many of the tribal people of northeast India, they are of Mongoloid origin. They have their own language, their own culture and traditions. When they head to Assam or Calcutta, they talk of traveling to India. It's a touchy issue in Mizoram. Separatist guerrillas fought for 20 years in a vain attempt to secure independence. The Metzo National Front has now laid down its arms and operates as a mainstream political party, but it still hankers after a separate nation-state. Inherently unlikely, perhaps, the Mizoram state government relies on Delhi for almost all of its spending money. Oil and other essential supplies are trucked in over hundreds of miles of perilous mountain roads. The Metzos have marvelous oranges, the biggest bananas I've ever seen, pineapples, and an exotic array of vegetables, but no easy means of getting them to international markets. The Metzos seem quite happy as they are. They are insulated from outside influence by their remoteness and generations-old regulations limiting settlement by non-locals. At the same time, the Metzos have one of the highest literacy rates in India. And then there is the theocratic side of life in Mizoram. In a state where all the leading politicians are professing Christians, the churches hold enormous influence, and the Young Metzos Association, a loosely church-affiliated organization, has something of the influence and demeanor of a young communist league in the old Soviet bloc. But straying into the gospel centenary hall in Aizawl and sitting in on an enthusiastic women's choir practice for the anniversary celebrations, an inspiring rendition of familiar Welsh hymns, it is impossible to avoid being swept away by a sense of anticipation. After all, it will soon be a century since Mizoram found its faith.
Section B, conversation.
What does highbrow mean, Gran?
Oh, it's knowing a lot about music and art and books and things like that. And being clever enough to enjoy them, too.
Are you highbrow, Gran?
Heavens no. I never was much of a reader. Those old writers are too long-winded for me. Your Aunt Polly is, though. To tell you the truth, she made rings around your dad when she was in school. Ought to have gone to university. Only, of course, your granddad wouldn't hear of it. Made her go into the shop. I told him at the time, she'll be a square peg in a round hole, I said. But he wouldn't listen. But I was right, because, well, to cut a long story short, she married the first man that asked her, just to get away from the shop. And that only lasted 3 years, till he was off to New Zealand with another woman.
I'm glad you're not highbrow, Gran. I'm glad Dad isn't either. Didn't Dad like school?
Oh, he liked it all right. But he was a bit of an all-rounder, you see. What I mean is, he did average well in most things, but he was never top of his class like Polly. I suppose the long and short of it is, he was lazy.
Dad? Lazy?
Not really lazy, just not interested, perhaps. Not that it mattered in the long run. He's done all right for himself. If you ask me, I don't think they ever quite got the measure of him at school.
What do you mean, got the measure of him?
They didn't take the trouble to find out what he could really do. That's what I mean. He's clever, your dad, in his own way.
Have you got the measure of me, Gran?
I shouldn't be surprised. Now stop asking questions and go and get the draughts board. We've just got time for a game before your mom comes in.
I beat you last time, didn't I, Gran?
Well, I'm going to beat you this time, so then we'll be all square. Go and get the board.
Section C, News Broadcast.
News Item 1.
The Thorpe facility in northwest England would reprocess spent nuclear fuel and in its first 10 years of operation could produce 60 tons of plutonium. The plant supporters say great expertise would be needed to convert the plutonium into weapon-grade material, and that in any case, the International Atomic Energy Agency would ensure that none went astray. But there's growing opposition in the United States to further production of plutonium, even for civilian uses. The Defense Department opposed the export of spent fuel to a reprocessing plant in France, saying it would be an extremely damaging signal at a time when the United States wanted to reduce the risk of nuclear proliferation. An independent report for the Pentagon says more plutonium will be produced from civilian programs such as Thorpe come from the dismantling of nuclear weapons.
News Item 2. Charter flights from Russia are bringing hundreds of tourists to Egypt, but they plan to bring more home with them than just memories and souvenirs. These tourists come to Egypt laden with goods to sell, to help pay for the trip and to buy items to sell back home. VOA's Laurie Caspin takes us to the informal International Bazaar for a look at what's happening. When it comes to shopping, language barriers fall easily. Bargaining in this makeshift street market is done in Arabic and Russian, sign language, or just a nod of the head. A blonde-haired Ukrainian schoolteacher spreads a selection of hand-painted wooden boxes on her lap. Nearby, a middle-aged man uses the hood of a car to spread out some ties, some kitchen gadgets, and a wooden chess set for sale. Several bottles of vodka are in the bag at his feet. A young Egyptian student smiles as he shows off the bottles of vodka and a set of teacups he has purchased. He won't keep them. He says he buys them for so little, he can resell the merchandise cheaper than the shops and still make a profit. The informal market works both ways. The Russian and Ukrainian tourists use their profit to buy fabric, leather goods, shoes, and other items to take home. One youthful-looking grandmother says she buys baby clothes and toys for her grandchildren. A former school teacher says she started traveling to Egypt and the Gulf States and even to Eastern Europe to sightsee and to sell goods for profits after her teacher's salary back home was cut. She was told about the charter trips by friends. But shopping tours are not without their problems. Angry residents often call the police to clear away the impromptu markets that clog their neighborhood streets, and the government is trying to curb the flood of carpetbaggers. Custom agents check Russian tour groups carefully when they arrive and again when they leave. The foreign ministry has ordered airport securities to stop travelers from Moscow who don't have visas already stamped in their passports. Until now, citizens of the former Soviet republics could get a tourist visa at the Cairo airport. But the tourist vendors from the Commonwealth of Independent States are not discouraged. Many say they've made the trip several times already, and they've even found time for some sightseeing at the pyramids and the Cairo Museum.
Section D, Academic Lecture and Note-Taking Exercise. Computers. There are at present over 250,000 computers in the world. Basically, a computer is a device for storing and processing information, or data as it is called. People have found ways of doing these things for thousands of years, of course, but computers can process highly complex information at great speed. Because of this, they are transforming many aspects of our lives. The development of microprocessors, you heard about their manufacture earlier, has speeded up this change even more. Microprocessors make it possible for computers to work much faster and to be made much smaller. So any particular computer can also be made more complex without taking up too much room. Computers are now being used in an enormous number of areas. We will look at a few of these. Computers are widely used in banking for processing checks. The code numbers on checks are printed in magnetic ink, which can be read by a computer. When you pay in a check, it is sent to a central clearinghouse, where all the checks are sorted according to the banks they belong to. Checks for a particular bank are then sent back to it, where they are processed by another computer, and the two accounts involved are debited and credited according to the amount of the check. Computers are also being used to process withdrawals and the payment of standing orders. Another development is known as the electronic funds transfer. This system makes it possible to transfer money directly from one account to another via computer. It is controlled by a computer in Belgium. If it is accepted by banks generally, this computer will become the center of a highly efficient worldwide network. Computers are being used more and more in medicine, too. The commonest use is for keeping hospital patient records. There may be access to these at several points: wards, offices, laboratories, and even operating theaters. Computers are also used in the delicate task of looking after patients in intensive care units and in monitoring those undergoing surgery. One of the latest developments is to use computers to assist diagnosis. A computer is programmed with information about a disease, using the accumulated knowledge of many specialists and textbooks. A doctor examining a patient may then be guided by the information given by the computer in what to look for and what questions to ask the patient. The information he gathers is fed into the computer. It may suggest further questions before finally providing a diagnosis. This kind of procedure causes some people anxiety. They feel it increases the gap in the personal relationship between doctor and patient. On the other hand, it makes widely available knowledge and expertise which before belonged to only a small number of specialists, or which had to be found with difficulty in published material. Computers are revolutionizing the work of those who work with words. Up to now, in the production of newspapers, a reporter has typed his story, known as copy. This has then been passed on to the editor. After being edited, the story would often have to be retyped and then sent to the typesetter. Prints would then be made of individual articles, and these, together with advertisements, would be assembled manually to form a complete page. This would then be the basis for the making of the printing plate. In computerized production, the reporter types his copy directly into the computer, which shows it on a visual display unit, or VDU. This is like a television screen. The editor accesses the story on his own VDU and changes it by typing instructions into the computer. Various articles are then arranged into columns according to a program run by the computer. The page layout is done on another VDU, and the complete page passed automatically to the printing stage. For the office typist, things are changing too. They can now use word processors, small computers similar to those used by the reporters. If you make a mistake, you don't have to paint out the error before retyping. You just backspace and type the correct letter. The change is made on the VDU automatically. It is also possible to insert material, single words, lines, or complete paragraphs. The computer itself reorganizes the layout of the whole text to accommodate the changes. It can also store complete texts and organize the paragraphs as needed. This is especially helpful in legal work, where many standard paragraphs are used. When the text is completed, the typing of the page is again handled by the computer. You will realize from hearing about these uses of computers that there are big changes in the kind of work done by many people, and, more important, in the number of people needed to do the work.